And welcome to Talk of the Rock. I am Jerry Griffin. I am your host this week. And this week we have the representatives from the Kodiak History Museum come to chat with us about some of the new things that we're working on and about the museum itself. And so with me, I have Margaret Greutert, curator of collections. And hi, Margaret. How are you?
Really well, thanks.
And Tyler Rose Hoffman, who is the development and communications manager for the museum. Hello.
Hi there.
So, well, let's start off. You have like stacks and stacks of pages of papers in front of you with like new exciting things going on at the museum. So, lay it on us. What do you got?
We have so many things. First, I just wanted to talk about an exciting project that we just finished up, and then I was gonna give it over to Tyler Rose to talk about some of the things we've been doing during the pandemic while we're closed, and ways that you can interact with us while we're closed.
I know a few exciting things that are coming up in the future.
Yeah. So first, we just completed our archives access project. Our collection consists of about 2,300 objects, but we also care for about 1,300 archive collections. And those are photographs, documents, letters, collections of things like that we care for in the museum. And so the goal for this project was making our archives more physically accessible for staff and researchers and making them actually searchable within our database. And so it really is part of a broader vision for bringing more people into our collection. If we know what we have and we know how to search it, there's more opportunities to learn from each other and about our collection. So we started off by doing a basic inventory of all of our archives and put them all in our database. So that means we can better respond to research requests and bring more people into our collection to share their expertise. And you can browse that inventory list on our website right now. If you just go to kodiakhistorymuseum.org and click on the Collections tab in the navigation bar, you can see all 273 archives that were recently inventoried and browse them if you would like.
And I scrolled through them yesterday, and there's some pretty cool stuff. Like 8mm films,
Oh,
and
yeah.
which would be really interesting to digitize and to just to look at.
It's absolutely crazy. We found so many treasures, like one Tyler Rose and I were just talking about this morning. We have, what is it, 149 hand-colored glass plate negatives from the Griggs expedition to the Valley of 10,000 Smokes at Katmai from 1915. You know, no big deal. And so it's treasures like that that we really wanted to be able to inventory and make searchable for people. So if anyone has a question, we can easily find something that could help them.
What kind of technology was involved to get this database together and online? Did you have to get a grant to build new technology, or is there?
That's the next step.
Oh, all right. Excellent.
So right now we're using PassPerfect. It's a small database kind of geared towards smaller history museums. And so we're using that right now just to keep track of our collection. But when we actually want to put our database online and make it more searchable, we'll probably have to use another platform. And so this is just the beginning stages, figuring out what we have, what's the baseline information about it, and kind of the next phase is how do we bring people in and bring community members in to perform collection reviews and really catalog our collection that's in like making it the most well organized so the people who value it are able to search through it, if that makes any sense.
Oh, yeah.
But I guess that's just one of so many projects that are going on right now while we're closed. You know, the exhibits in store are closed, but during the past couple months, I guess since March 14th, since we've been closed, we've been working really hard on the technology to be able to put some of our stuff online. And Tyler Rose is really our whiz. She's our tech whiz, so I kind of will I'll let her talk about what types of things you can find online.
Yeah, we have a lot of resources still available at the museum, even though our gallery is currently closed. First of all, we're starting to take research appointments again, as Margaret was saying. So if you want to see any of the neat things that are in our archive, get in touch with her at collections@KodiakHistoryMuseum.org to make an appointment to see any of the things that we have upstairs. We also have an exhibit that's online. So it's Hold, an Introduction to Mindfulness. We had originally planned that for our temporary gallery space, but we had to adapt to the pandemic. So now you can see the whole exhibit and all the material we would have had in the museum online. As well, we're also having, we have the Day by Day project.
Oh, yeah, that.
And Margaret's been involved in this as well. We're collecting any pictures, digital files, music,
really
screen
any
caps,
digital files, anything that help represent individual experiences.
Yeah, that represent your experience of the pandemic, and we're going to be collecting those in a research file. So do you remember the
email? Oh, yes.
The email?
So far we've collected about 320 digital files. And so those are going to be publicly available by research appointment for years to come. And so if anybody wants to share anything, movies, letters, pictures, to put in that file, you can just email daybyday@KodiakHistoryMuseum.org or just email me at collections@KodiakHistoryMuseum.org.
Yeah, and if you want to see some of the things that have already been submitted, they're in a blog on our website under the Day by Day project.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that sounds great. And there is like a release that people sign when they submit their materials so that they don't or is this just like, hey, give us your stuff, and when you give us your stuff, anybody can...
It's kind of when you give us your stuff, anybody. There's more information on the website, so it kind of walks you through how we're going to be using those. It's going to be in our digital research file, so researchers can come in and take a look. And with anything, they can be used for educational purposes, so we won't be making money off of them. We won't be selling your photographs. Something like that. But,
and this is pictures, audio, and video... Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All of it. Okay.
Yeah, we've had people send in screen caps of text messages, or we're also collecting some of the mandates, and so PDFs are also welcome.
Mm-hmm. It's just to provide a kind of a day-by-day view and snapshot to kind of our ever-changing world right now. So when a researcher in the future wants to come in and see what's going on, they can come and see maybe these pre-published materials, but they're all collected in one space. Hmm. The museum online store is also the last thing we want to talk about, maybe.
So the museum online store, as you know, our store is closed and our galleries are closed, but the museum store online is open, and we have some of our best-selling products available there. And you can find that on our website. But if there's something there that you know we have that you aren't finding, feel free to give us a call at 486-5920. And we will try and find it for you.
Yeah, and you could just buy it online and pick it up at the museum. So a lot of people have been using that feature.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we found it's been all right during the closure. Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing how much work you can get done when you don't have patrons. I don't want to get you on record saying something like that, but it's an interesting just kind of irony about the whole thing, right?
Yeah, we've been able to tackle a lot of projects that have kind of been sitting on the back burner. Mm-hmm. Because we don't have people coming into our gallery, which is really sad.
Right.
Yeah. But that's why we're excited to offer research appointments. And we've had about 3 so far and have some procedures in place for keeping everyone safe during the pandemic. But that's really half of our job is providing access to the collection and empowering researchers to write about Kodiak history, or, you know, even if you just want to come in for fun, or you're an artist and you want some inspiration, it's like, just give us a call and we can find something that might interest you, because not even half of our collection is on display. We have thousands of objects, and so we're just continually trying to make those more available to people to view.
And if you're someone who's ever wondered what's upstairs at the museum, this is your chance.
Yeah, come upstairs.
I think I've only been up there once.
You should come upstairs. We have a bigger space upstairs set aside for researchers.
Cool.
Or just research is kind of a maybe a more formal term. You can just come up and see cool stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, that was my next question. You know, you mentioned research appointments, but you don't have to be a professional historian. You don't even have to be an amateur historian.
Yeah.
You can just be curious.
Yeah,
we've had artists just want to come and see some of the art we have or take inspiration for something. Mm-hmm. Or we have homeschool families who are talking about, you know, newspapers. And we have really cool stuff. And so it's really just a place to come and experience some wonder with something that's really real right in mm-hmm. front of you. And so, yeah, we're hoping that people feel comfortable to use it more casually. And so it's just a continual effort trying to make that space more inviting.
And so how you had mentioned the mindfulness project. Can you mm-hmm. talk a little bit about how that fits into the whole scope of the museum?
Yeah. So many things to touch on there. So our temporary exhibits gallery, it's a small gallery in our museum that we are currently rethinking, especially when talking about some of the anti-racism and decolonization that's happening across the country right now, and really examining what our practices are and how we really are engaging people and how we're serving people here. And so kind of our first step is changing the way we do temporary exhibits. I mean, we all know exhibits are powerful social tools that can be used to strike conversation and wonder around a topic. And so right now, our temporary exhibits will be co-curated with community partners. And so, for example, the mindfulness exhibit, we partnered with Kodiak locals Monica Claridge and Zoya Hernstein. And they're both practitioners of mindfulness here. You know, they work in physical therapy and physical education with youth. And they really are spearheading that movement in Kodiak. And so we were having conversations with Monica, and she really identified, you know, we see the desire in Kodiak for people to come together who already practice mindfulness, but also we want to educate people about what it is and what some of the resources are here. And so we saw the opportunity to make an exhibit around it. It just shows that the museum is trying to take away our voice and empower our community voices. So it's really what Monica and Zoya wanted to say about mindfulness and trying to help that community get the word out about it. And so we're going to be using that model moving forward in our exhibits. Really exciting. We just found out that we received a $10,000 grant from the Alaska Community Foundation. It's their social justice fund grant. And that's going to help us compensate our community partners for our exhibits and compensate some of our programs and lectures and be able to pay for some food and things like that with our exhibits and programs. And thinking about kind of social justice on a larger scale and where our museum fits into that, we find compensating people is so important, because if you think about it, our broader museum system really relies on volunteers to be able to come in and share their time and expertise with us. But, you know, not everybody has the time and resources to come in the middle of a weekday and work with us. And so thinking about how do we diversify our audience and partners, we really need to start compensating people. Because right now, the majority of our volunteers are wealthier white patrons who do have this time. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of more on the broader work that we're starting to do, and having some pretty intense conversations at staff meetings and mm-hmm. kind of making sure that we're constantly uncomfortable talking about things, because we are in a colonial building. Mm-hmm. Museums are colonial institutions. How do we talk about that? And, you know, you're sitting here in front of me and I'm a white cisgendered female who's in charge of managing the exhibits and collections. And so constantly thinking about how can we make it so that I'm actually empowering community voices and my voice isn't the overarching theme in the exhibits. And it's slow. It's slow going. We have a lot of work to do.
Oh, I mean, for sure. Yeah. You know, I was scrolling through the list of, you know, the artifact list, and you know, you brought up social justice and decolonization, anti-racism, and there are some really cool things in this artifact database, but there are some also problematic things too. anti-Japanese racist World War II propaganda, and yes, I'm going to throw this out there: the Cry of the Wild Ram. Artifacts also are elements of this kind of, you know, problematic past and present to a certain extent. With those particular artifacts, how are you working with those, especially with the public that come in and look with them? Are you contextualizing them, or what's going on with those pieces?
Yeah, well, those specific pieces that you mentioned are in our collection storage, but they are available for anyone to come and view. And for us, it's really we're obviously collecting those types of objects because we don't, we always want to make sure we're not forgetting our history. But it is about how we empower those objects and how we put them into context. And so that's where the community voices aspect comes in. It's really not about the museum celebrating and interpreting everything that we want to. Mm-hmm. It's how are people who are super connected with those objects feeling about them? How are researchers coming in? How can we make them more accessible to them so we can continue those conversations? And how do we bring community experts on these topics to come in and tell us how to catalog them and how it's most useful to them? You know, one example that we were talking about recently is our bust of Alexander the First.
Sure. Yes. That's, you know, with statues being pulled down all over the lower 48, and I'm talking about it here with Seward and Cook and Baranoff.
I love talking about this. So, you mentioned statues are being taken down across the country, these big bronze statues of kind of these white colonial men. And there's two sides there, you know, of the argument here. And, you know, even though we're in a small town and have a small museum, we're seeing those issues even here. And we see this in our bust of Alexander the First. We have a bronze bust in the collection. And it used to sit on top of the magazine building.
Oh, really?
Yes,
I did not know that.
I know. This is fun. On the roofline, it used to sit on the front gable looking out across the channel. And it's Tsar Alexander, you know, during Russian-American period, looking out. And it was supposed to kind of be this power symbol of when sea otter hunters would go out. And, you know, a lot of these people were kind of indentured servants to the company, paying off their cycle of debt. And then there's this czar looking over them when they leave the canal, you know, this huge symbol of colonialism in Russian America. And we have that in our collection. And that was taken down off the gable in the early 1900s when the Erskines lived there. We don't know why. But, you know, it's kind of a great example of we wouldn't put that back on the museum now. We're not part of Russian America. We don't want to put that object in the context of this is the czar looking over us. He is in power. You know, you are an indentured servant of the company. Remember that. And so many other things that it symbolized. It could have been many other things to many different people. But the point is, it's taken down and it's in our museum collection, and that history is being preserved. And it kind of makes at least my job as a collection manager more important, and collection managers across the country, you know, making sure we document that history of what it originally stood for, so that we don't forget that. But taking it out of that context where it's, you know, symbolizing this power over people and values that maybe we don't promote anymore, is a sign of progress. And so we'll be preserving that statue and that history, but there's a question of how do we move forward with our values that we want to project today.
So Tyler Rosen, how does that connect with the development side and the fundraising side and getting that kind of outside support where we're really asking one of the bigger, broader questions of like, what does history actually really mean? And so when you're trying to get support for a history museum, how does that all come together?
Yeah, it's definitely, there's been some interesting conversations that we've had to have at the museum lately about just determining whether we're going to speak out or how, like that will look for our organization.
And that's something that's happening across the country. Exactly. You know, if museums, you know, museums are not neutral.
Yeah.
And that is, that's a conversation that's kind of new and exciting.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And just talking about what that really means. And you know, we hear this in protests today. Silence really shows your support for the status quo. Mm. And so by museums being silent or not taking a stand in human rights, you really are saying that the way things are is okay. Mm-hmm. And so there are, you know, museums have been scared. Oh, will we lose our big donors who are uncomfortable with these types of conversations? And the answer is no. And Tyler Rose can talk a little bit about how it really has even increased our membership and our interest in the collection once we started making statements about how Black Lives do matter and how we are actively trying to do anti-racism work in a colonial institution.
Yeah, yeah,
Tyler. Yeah, I mean, I definitely know that we were a little, you know, not hesitant at all, but definitely felt like it was a brave thing to take a stand and didn't know exactly what the reaction would be, but it has been overwhelmingly positive. We've increased our membership hugely this month, also due to our giveaway, but also we've gotten many kind letters from people saying that they really appreciate the stand.
Are these new members, like brand new members?
Yeah, new members, as well as people renewing their memberships. Okay. Yeah.
I think it's a sign of rebuilding trust as well in the museum. You know, if you stay silent and don't express your values, you know, our core values include inclusiveness and community and innovation. Mm-hmm. And if we're not acting on those values of inclusiveness, then where's the, you know, how can you trust what we're really saying? And so kind of putting action to what we're saying is really helping, I think.
Yeah.
So in like the fulfillment or the realization of this, it's not necessarily a new direction for history museums, but a new kind of self-reflection for history museums. What are some of the artifacts that you wish you could get to help fulfill this vision? Or what are some of the things that we should be kind of consciously curating now for 50 years from now when the history museum comes calling and I'm on my deathbed, what should I be willing to in my will, what should I be giving to the other than money? I know money is usually a good thing.
But. Yeah, you know. I think that ties back to a little bit the day by day project where we're collecting kind of contemporary stories or representations of people's experience now. Wouldn't that be so cool if, you know, during an historic event that we think about, like the 1964 earthquake and tsunami, that people were like, oh, I should save this letter right now and give it to the museum, you know, these firsthand accounts of what's going on right now. And so I think part of what we're doing is trying to reach out to people now through exhibits and research appointments and figure out what's important and what people have now to start donating to the museum so that we have, like, you know, if we could look back and get some of the stuff during that time. Mm-hmm. And we have an opportunity to do that. So that's kind of what I'm excited about. I don't know if you have anything in particular, Tyler Rose.
Yeah, well, just sort of to complete that, I think we love things that have stories.
Yeah.
Not just an object that's beautiful, but something that comes with an important story that means something to someone in the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for saying that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like there's so many objects that have intrinsic value, you know, for example, a gold-plated samovar, but without the family history, the provenance, the story behind it, what does that actually mean? You know, what differentiates us between an antique store and a history museum? And so that also plays into context with controversial objects like the bust. If we didn't have the backstory behind that, that I just told you about being on the gable in the canal and what that actually meant before, it would just be a bronze bust. So that's what we're looking for.
Hold on. I had a question and it just left me. Let's see. Shoot. I should have written it down as I was, as I was thinking about it. What are your, future plans for the space or the building?
Yeah, well, we have a lot of like future plans that are coming up, things that are in the works, even though the museum gallery space is still closed. So things to look for in the future.
Yeah.
We have the Erskine House Storytelling Project coming up in the fall. So we are working on republishing Carolyn Erskine's memoir, Faraway Island, A Childhood in Kodiak, which talks about her life in the magazine and old Kodiak, and has some really great stories. And then also Sea Stories, a nonprofit film company we are partnering with, who will be remotely working with Kodiak youth to document their experience of the pandemic. So you can look for an announcement looking for Kodiak youth to participate in the coming up in the next couple months. Mm-hmm. And then I just wanted to let everybody know we're currently having a giveaway for 2 round-trip Alaska Airlines tickets. And if you want to be entered in that, you need to get a new membership or renew your museum membership before 4 p.m. today.
That's today.
We're having our drawing today.
And when do you need to travel by?
They're good until next June.
Okay,
so
all right.
Hopefully.
Those are a hot commodity these days, plane tickets.
Yeah.
Who renews their membership, and you can always call us to check on your membership, mm-hmm. and you can renew your membership on our website.
Yeah, through our website, KodiakHistoryMuseum.org.
All right, well, we have about 60 seconds left, so I'll leave it up to you. What is your final pitch?
Oh, goodness. I guess, do you have anything to add?
Good.
I guess thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for
having
us.
That was so much to cover. But we just want people to know we are working even though it's closed.
Yeah.
And there are ways to get involved with a museum and still take advantage of some of our resources while our exhibits are closed, because we're so much more than just our exhibits. Mm-hmm. And so thanks, Jared. That was really fun.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks. Thank you so much to my guests, Margaret Greutert, curator of collections, and Tyler Rose Hoffman, the development and communications manager. You know, I abbreviated communications and I almost said communications manager. And then also thank you to Sarah Short, executive director, for setting this up. I hope she's listening.
Hey, Sarah.
Hi, Sarah.
All right. Well, thanks again for joining us. And thanks for listening to Talk of the Rock. And go check out the Kodiak History Museum online, their list of artifacts. It's just amazing. It's just really cool, all the things you can see. But all right. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.